Hello, and welcome to Eggpod Express with me, Chris Shaw. Eggpod Express takes a jaunty stroll through 1960s music magazines with a potpourri of delicious guests. To read along with us, the magazine is online at iamtheeggpod.com, where you'll find an exclusive playlist of this week's top 30 singles. To support this podcast and to access bonus content, please subscribe to patreon.com/eggpod. Now, by now, I hope you get the idea of this format. Basically, a guest and myself go through a 1960s pop magazine. But this one is slightly different. In fact, we don't actually get any further than the front cover. This is because I'm joined by Andy Baum, keyboard player in The Herd, and since the 70s with Status Quo. But as well as that, he's played with Pink Floyd during the Wall tour. He's done everything. And I can honestly say this is the most bizarre and enjoyable interview I've ever done. We start talking about The Herd, and basically it goes off from there. But I think it's all the better for it. What you'll quickly pick up is that despite being an excellent musician and songwriter, Andy Baum appears to think pretty well everything he's ever recorded is a load of old rubbish. Of course, he's completely wrong. Both his compositions with The Herd and his solo albums are rich, diverse, and often witty pieces of art. So again, apologies for breaking the format, but I hope you find this interview as enjoyable as I did. Let's go in. In this episode, I'm joined by, I can't believe it, Andy Baum. Hello.
Unbelievable. Why is that? Why can't you believe it?
I don't deserve to be here.
It's nice to be here.
Well, you live here.
Well, oh, that, yeah, that, yeah, details.
First of all, congratulations on your new album, Out There, which I absolutely adore.
I really like you a lot already.
You don't really get many sci-fi albums these days, do you? What was?
No, it's. I'm really glad you like it, because it, basically it is music to slit your wrists by. But the idea, or the original idea was, and still is, a massive blockbuster film followed by a musical. And the musical bit, I'm really... really excites me, but if you could start with a film. So if you know Mr. Disney's mobile number, I'd be grateful.
I'll look for you.
Bill Burke?
But Russell Holborn.
Yeah.
That's pretty from this.
Yeah.
Russell. How did that collaboration come about?
It came, yeah, I know, it's a bit weird, isn't it? Our sons went to the same school, Tower House at Sheen, and our wives met at the school gates, as you do. And one thing led to another. They got on like a house on fire. And Russell and I met eventually, and we got on like another house on fire. So, and then one day, Russ said, I think we'd had a few jars. And Russ said, why don't we try and write a song? So I thought, yeah. I usually say no, because I don't really like art by committee. I can't do it, really, because I always leave it to the other person, which is... stupid, you know, because I think their ideas are better than mine, and of course they never are. So anyway, so we messed about with a couple of things, and then we really got nutty and got bigger and bigger and bigger, and we started working on this weird thing, which is a lot of it was influenced by a book he'd just published called Fremder, German for stranger.
Okay.
That's Fremder, and that was released in 96. And we worked together doing bits and pieces slowly over the next two or three years. We ended up with five or six tracks, and I've got a folder full of stuff, full of bits, which will be part two.
Ooh.
Oh, no. Well, if you like part one, you know, there will be part two. It's not going to be this month, I can tell you.
I mean, that's not the first time you've collaborated with writers of fiction. Obviously, Trevor Preston back in the 70s.
What are you like? Where are you from? Who are you? Trevor Preston, yeah. Oh, you know all this stuff.
Well, I do.
Wow, yeah. I know, I really admire Trevor. And of course, that would worked out very nicely for me. Ace of Wands, the theme tune, Tarot.
Jet white dove, snowback snake, time has turned his face. From the edge of mystery, where running is no race. Ageless night, careless day, fate reaches out a hand to touch the edge of destiny, a story with no end.
tarot cards wherever he can. Tarot cards, tarot the diamond man. Tarot cards with mystic hands.
Terrified me as a kid, that program.
Did it?
Yeah. It's still, I have fever dreams about it.
Really?
Yeah, it's terrifying.
You are weird.
I know.
I was deeply in love with the Luli.
Oh, the mother. Was she the mother? No.
No, that was the aide. Oh, she was beautiful. She was her daughter, Kate Beckinsale. Anyway, she was wonderful. I was in love with her, and I never met her. But and I wrote the B-side, Luli Rides Again. I would just think that was all about her, yeah.
Yeah, and she won't hear it, do you know?
I don't know. I guess maybe she did hear it. I hope so. But that instrument was actually just a wet dream for me. What's so funny?
Hopefully she won't hear that.
Well, she might be flattered because she's probably an old wrinkly now. But, you know. No, lovely, lovely wrinkly. No offence.
Tarot, what a song.
Oh, I'm glad you like. Like many things I did, I played everything myself except the drums, which was Henry Spinetti.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, bless him.
Carried on from the Hurts. Because he replaced Andrew Steele.
Yes, he did, yeah.
And then Judas Jump.
Yes, that's right, yeah. Henry, best drummer.
Oh, Victor.
Victor Spinetti. The first time I met Victor, he walked out of his bathroom, stark naked. Actually, exactly the same as Jonathan King. But let's maybe not go there.
I have a story about Jonathan.
Hey, it was the 60s, you know what I'm saying?
Wowzers.
More of which when we stop recording.
You've got to believe me, just open your mind. My tangled emotions, I need to unwind. Cause baby, though you know I'll never leave you, never wanted to deceive you. Although I do, but I don't want our loving to die. And I'm so tired of living a lie. Though I know I've been weak, I can try. Yeah, I'll try.
So we're going back to the 20th of April, 1968. To give you some context, this was the week that saw the first decimal coins being issued in Britain, with a new 5 and 10 pence piece replacing the shilling and 2 shilling pieces. Pierre Trudeau being sworn in as Canada's 15th Prime Minister. It was the week the Columbia University crisis, in which students from Democratic Society and the Afro-American Society began a non-violent 6-day strike calling for Columbia to cut ties with the Institute for Defense Analysis. Sadly, this ended up with 1,000 police storming the campus, resulting in violence and 700 arrests. So, Andy, I was going to take us back to your memories of April 1968, but we can read about it on the front cover of the publication we're talking about, which is Record Mirror from the 20th of April 1968. And you're on tour with The Herd.
Yeah.
And this is an interview with Derek Boltwood during a recording of Simon D's D Time.
Oh.
So he says, when you're tired, exhausted, in the right mood for a few weeks' holiday, it must be pretty depressing not to be able to see much more than one day off work within the next few months. So it's hardly surprising that when I was chatting to various members of The Herd the other day, their eyelids were propped open with the matchsticks, and Andy Bam was complaining that his mouth felt like the inside of a tram driver's glove.
That was Trevor Preston's line.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and I subsequently put it into a song. It's called Where Were You When I Fell Out of Bed Last Night. Trevor Preston, yeah.
Foreshadowing. They were at the BBC studios appearing on D Time. This was considered to be the nearest thing they'd had to a day off for weeks, even though they'd been rehearsing down there since early morning. Andy said, we're enjoying the tour, but it's very tiring. There's a rumour going around the group at the moment that we'll be having 3 days off when the tour ends, but I don't believe it. It sounds too good to be true. It's funny, though, there are so many stories appearing in papers and magazines saying how great The Herd are and so on. But then we appear at a concert and the house is only half full. What's it all about? It's a bit depressing because even if you don't take all the stories too seriously, they build you up. And it's a great bring down when nobody turns up to see you play. There's some consolation in the fact that Az isn't the only tour that's doing badly. The only one that seems to be meeting with success is the Gene Pitney tour. In fact, I'd like to go to that myself, if only to see why it's more popular than the Van Outers. But apart from the tour, which isn't really too bad, we've been very lucky. We've had a lot of press coverage and a lot of publicity. And I honestly think that if this record that's out at the moment, I Don't Want Our Loving to Die, is a hit for us, we'll be able to feel fairly well established.
as established as any group that's had four or five hit records anyway, although it's very difficult to draw comparisons with other groups.
Was that really that... Who is this solipsistic twat? Right, this guff. Did I really say that?
You did.
Well, you did. Derek Boltwood. Well, I'm sorry about that. I apologise now.
What was that? Do you remember that tour?
That tour? No, I don't remember tour. No, it wasn't. That was not a tour. It was gigs.
Yeah.
Danny Batesh should tell us where we were going, and Howard and Blakey took all the money. It was simple.
Tell me about them, because Ken Howard and Alan Blakely, obviously they're previously had number ones with Daisy Dirty Beak, Vintage, and Honeybones.
Yeah.
Because didn't they change your style, or they tried to amend the herd?
Oh, it was a complete left turn, but we did get hits. We did get hit records, you know, through them. And they were, I mean, some of the stuff, the singles that... That Dave Dozy did, I thought they were really great songs. And in retrospect, they really are clever. Mm-hmm. They're clever, but they changed us. We had quite a following. We had a residency at the Marquee on Monday. They put us in because no one else would do it, you know. So we started off Monday night at the Marquee. Can you imagine? There were 49 people to start with. In the end, we were getting 900. So they were very happy with that. And then, but it was nothing to do with Howard and Blakely kind of stuff. We were doing a bit of jazz, and just a bit of posing. And I remember I would stand on the organ and throw bananas at girls and stuff. I mean, a bit weird. But
what, bananas for any reason? Or?
Well, you just have to use your imagination, really. You know, it was the 60s. And get that peeled. Anyway, in the end, we were doing these gigs maybe five or six nights a week for some incredibly really good money, like £225 a night, maybe even more.
Yeah.
Do the maths. Well, after our third hit, the band's wages went up from £12 a week to £15 a week.
Brian?
That's 60 quid for the band, and the rest just vanished. Yeah.
It's so common. All these bands from the 60s with the same story.
Yep.
It's horrendous. Having said that, things like From the Underworld, I Can Fly, I Don't Want Our Loving to Die, great. They are really good songs.
Yeah.
They're bittersweet.
They're good, yeah. They weren't really anything to do with us, but they were really good. Yeah. Especially From the Underworld, it was really good.
Yeah, February 68, Paradise Lost album came out.
Yeah.
So obviously you had a few more of your own compositions.
I think we had a couple on there just to sort of patting us on the head, really. But
on your own is on it, that's great.
Have you ever been on your own? Do you ever want to be alone? Apart from the normal throng.
Was there an instrumental on there?
Impressions of Oliver.
Yeah.
Which is a banger.
Yeah.
That's a jazz.
You reckon? Because in retrospect, I would have thought that was boring as hell, you know.
What? That's one of the best things you ever did. It's awesome.
Have I told you I like you? Did I mention that earlier?
Oh,
There's a friend of mine called Louis Barth who does a...
Louis who? Sorry?
Barth.
Yeah?
Who does a... he does a jazz show. He's wonderful. He's wonderful. He's written books about Kendall and Morecambe and Wise. It's brilliant. He's really good. But he is not Barth. And he does a jazz show. And he's getting all these requests from Oscar Peterson, or can you play that, you know, like proper hardcore jazz? And I said, it's a bit jazzy. It's Impressions of Oliver by The Hurt. And he was like, okay, I've had a request here. I'll give it a go. And by the end of it, he said, right, I've never bought an album so quickly in my life. I've
really?
Just ordered Paradise Lost from some bloke in New Zealand or whatever.
Oh, that's great.
So if it's being accepted by a jazz expert...
What he didn't know was it's actually about Oliver Reed. Oliver Nelson, yeah, obviously.
I was going to say.
We were big fans.
Yeah. But obviously your composition, Sunshine Cottage, which is my favourite.
Is it?
Ever. Yeah. It's a brilliant song.
Glad you liked it. How many did you buy? We bought loads. It still didn't go in the charts. Yeah. We bought shed loads. Our roadies went out and emptied the shelves.
Because it just...
Well, I think it wasn't very commercial for the time, probably. And I think the boot was probably put in...
Oh, them again.
No, not that, no. But if... what's the business term for if your managers, you dump them and then they say, right, we're going to fuck them?
Oh, I don't know what the word is, but you've described perfect.
That, I think that's what happened.
Wonderful Eggpod Express.
So with streaming now, the reason I'm doing all these podcasts is I want to introduced music to lots of 60s fans. Because my friend called Hugh interviewed you recently for Shindig magazine.
Oh, yes.
And he was saying you were genuinely surprised that people loved your 60s stuff.
Yeah.
There's so many people online who love 60s. And
that's why my mouth is hanging open.
But it's true. And there's a thing online which has got Paradise Lost plus a load of B-sides... I'm guessing unreleased songs at the time. So you've got things like Beauty Queen.
What? Where do you get Beauty Queen? Yeah, I remember that. That was in V. It was. What? Where do you find this stuff?
You go on. I don't know if you've got Apple Music.
This is on. You can stream this, you mean?
Yeah, on Apple Music. It'll be on Spotify as well. Yeah, it's called The Herd, Paradise and Underworld, The Complete Collection. So it's got the first album, and then it's all done alphabetically. Things like Sugarloaf Mountain, Sweet William. I think that was B-side, wasn't it?
Understand me. That's an appalling song. It's...
I'm not selling it.
I could have been a salesman.
And then the early stuff, she was really saying something.
Gosh.
That was when you were pre-keyboards, was it? Or
to tell the truth, I've always been pre-keyboards. The only thing I can play properly is drafts.
Because didn't you get a discount on your piano lessons? Because... and a thumb missing.
Yeah, well, Mrs. White, yeah, Queen Anne Avenue. She didn't have a thumb missing. The truth is, she'd actually had an accident.
I shouldn't laugh.
With the dustbin lid. And halfway down her thumb, instead of... Halfway down her thumb, instead of a continuing thumb, there was a massive ball of fat. So she was playing the piano like that, and her thumb would miss. So my mother...
So you got 10% discount.
I got a discount because she could.
Why is she not playing any of the bass notes?
Oh, she was lovely.
Oh,
so I got. So at the end, I got 40 minutes for half a crown instead of half an hour.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which obviously explains why I became a rock star.
Our Fairy Tale is a classic. And what I love about that, I love hearing... Because you're a rare... Well, I say rare. Obviously, the Beatles did the same, and the Beach Boys and bands like that. But you had three vocalists, really. So it's yourself, Peter Frampton, and Gary.
Yeah.
Gary, so well.
Oh, Gary, and a lovely voice, Gary. I haven't seen or heard of him. Last thing I heard, I think, was about 40 years ago, that he was in Australia and was... doing some kind of work with or for Hank Marvin.
Oh, okay. Because he was in Fox, wasn't he?
Yeah, they were very good. And Hank Wankford Band. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. I saw them. I saw Hank Wankford Band there.
He sort of sometimes a bit Scott Walker and sometimes a bit Johnny Cash on the country.
He did. He did have a thing for Scott.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. And you don't so try not to mislead her. You've done many foolish things, but deep inside you need her. Not like a trouser thing, but, no. You know. Scott Walker had a fantastic voice. You know. We did actually a lot of shows with John Walker and that.
Did you?
Yeah, probably in Germany. And poor bloke, I mean, talk about struggling. He wasn't happy.
No. We covered him recently because obviously the Walker Brothers have just split up. Obviously, best thing in the world for Scott. He was going to do his best work ever, really.
Of course, yeah.
But, Images, the last Walker Brothers album, is great.
Is it?
Yeah.
Incidentally, one of the funniest men I've ever met in my 60 years on the road is Gary Leeds. He just made me laugh and laugh and laugh all the time. Where he was with The Rain. On a tour we did, yeah.
So, yeah, the Herd are on tour. New Musical Express readers had recently voted the Herd the sixth best new group of 1967, behind the Bee Gees, Traffic, Tremolos, Procol Harum, and the Jimi Hendrix Experience. That's all right.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well-respected magazine as well. Let's just do the front cover. Hopefully.
But that's probably the worst outfit I've ever worn. Ever.
What is it?
I don't know. I don't recognise it. I wouldn't wear stuff like that. And yet there it is in black and white, in colour. Sorry.
Yeah. But that hair was awesome. How many people tried to copy that hairstyle? It was so good.
Poor bastards.
So yeah, The Herd. Yeah, I really hope people listening to this have a listen. I mean, you've actually done quite a bit since then. But I just think there's such a great body of work that people need to hear. It's worth talking about.
Well, that's great. But the things like Sunshine Cottage, My Fairy Tale, and a couple of the others you mentioned are the way we would have gone. I mean, that was all, what we really wanted to do. We didn't really want to do I Don't Want Our Loving to Die.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Not really. Yes. Although that was a big hit, wasn't it?
Yeah. But yeah, our Fairy Tale. And I love the duet. Like I say, the diverse voices, but you and Peter, especially when you duet, your voices work so well together. And you've got that, I feel good again, I'll start to live again, I will smile again. and when you're sort of crossovering the vocal, it's such a lovely sound.
I think I'll have to hear it again.
Shall I play a bit?
I mean, I remember the chord sequence. Okay, I don't remember it. I mean, there's a lot there I don't remember. That's really good.
Yeah.
That is really good, yeah. I'm impressed. Who are they?
They're great.
Brilliant.
There's a great piano on it.
Piano? Oh, yeah, that thing. Yeah. With the white black, yeah, thing, yeah. I remember another one we liked, which I thought was all really good or had potential. I Lied to Auntie May.
Didn't someone...
Was that recorded? Oh, yeah, they did, actually. Need Change?
Yes.
Where'd that come from?
Yes. I don't think they heard it. I can't
the
see
need,
it.
Need Change. We did a few gigs with them at the Marquee. I've actually got a small poster in my studio about the Herd and Need Change.
Oh.
Yeah.
Have you
must be worth... Oh. Pennies. Yeah.
Have you got much... Stuff from those days still.
Stuff from those days.
I suppose a lot's happened since.
The Herd. I've got a few bits. I can't remember what they are, really. I've got about 98 Status Quo tour shirts. And 28 tour jackets. The Herd. No, we couldn't... I don't know. I can't... I might have a few cassette tapes that... Yeah. In fact, actually, it was before cassettes came in, I think.
Real to real.
Yeah. We had... Peter would work... He understood this stuff. It weighed a ton. Yeah. It was a real to real, and we bounced stuff across, and he knew how to do it, and I never got...
Oh, okay.
I never got to grips with it. That's another name that's escaped me. Never get old.
Fine.
Until the next...
Appelez-moi chef de rayon, je suis pas d'accord. Ma mère m'a offert ce monde, et moi, je n'en veux pas. Non, non, ce genre de cadeau, c'est bon pour ceux qu'on n'aime pas. Ça sent la poudre et le sang, ça sent la sueur et l'argent. Remboursez-moi, je ne veux pas.
This is a bit of a confusing story, because I've heard different versions. Obviously, when the band split up, but before that, there was sort of Peter Frampton being tempted away to do the Small Faces stuff with Humble Pie. And I think he played...
No, well, it wasn't Small Faces. I mean, Steve wanted to leave Humble Pie. I mean, leave Small Faces.
Didn't Peter play on the Johnny Hallyday album with the Small Faces, I seem to remember? Because it's essentially the last Small Faces album. They did the backing for Johnny Hallyday.
Yes, no, that was just that was, I think that was after Steve left, because Ronnie Mack and Kenny did some work for Johnny, and then not long after that, Peter and I did loads of work for Johnny and in London at Olympic, round the corner, for Johnny and Nanette Workman, who was his girlfriend at the time, and Sylvie Vartan. But, no, Peter didn't work with the Faces for Johnny at that time, I don't think, no.
So what was... Because I always thought the story was that Steve wanted Peter into the Small Faces, and then they split up, and then obviously they formed Humble Pie. But apparently Peter Moore wanted you to come along as well to join Humble Pie.
Yes, I know. I went to, we went to Epping and we saw... It's kind of a blur, but I remember going there and Ronnie and Steve had cottages on the same plot of land, but they were separate, and we'd lie on the lawn and they would smoke dope, and which I didn't. It never got on with me, really. Much to my chagrin, actually. I never could.
You're still coming out with a sci-fi albums.
Didn't like it.
You don't.
Well,
you can do that.
Yeah. So, and I liked Ronnie a lot, but I think Peter wanted me in there, yeah, obviously. But Steve didn't particularly like me, and I really didn't like Steve. I didn't like him. No, as my old dad would say, he sort of left a nasty taste in the mouth. Ronnie's a lovely bloke.
Oh, you got a feel for Ronnie. It wasn't his fault, but he had a lot of problems with his lead singers leaving him in the lurch. Obviously, the Faces, the same thing happened with Rod. And Rod, the horrible thing is when Rod did an album on his under the name Rod Stewart, but it was the Faces backing him.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Ronnie. And Ronnie, I've seen interviews with him. Obviously, I've never met him, but he always seemed such a humble, sweet,
lovely guy. I've got his album, the 12-inch, and I play it.
Yeah.
Any more for any more. I last saw him in Covent Garden. He was with his wife. He was limping. He had a walking stick. And we shared a bottle of wine. And that's the last time I saw him. And sure enough, a couple of years later, he's dead too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he had a rich life, didn't he?
Very rich.
And lots of fun, I guess.
Yeah, yes, he did, yeah. He wrote some good songs, Ronnie.
Come on with me. I hear the neighbor's dogs is barking, and soon the country all around him will come to look the same. There's a place from where they came.
Just looking at some of the new singles being released this week, The Beach Boys' Friends is coming out. It's the lead single from their forthcoming album, which Brian Morrison said was his favourite Beach Boys album. Bob, so you played with The Beach Boys, was it the Don't Stop Tour?
Yeah.
How did that come about? And it was the proper Beach Boys as well, wasn't it?
It was the proper Beach Boys. It was really, I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed it. How did it come about? Because we were... basically, we were told to do an album of covers because the stuff that we were writing, was not deemed a good enough chance to take for the record company again. Things getting more and more difficult in the business. And frankly, a lot of status quo stuff is the same old, which is okay.
Apologies to the quo fans.
In a way. No, that salesman's coming up again. I can't help it. And anyway, we did album covers, and we thought, well, who could we get to be involved? So, struggling about, actually, the grim reality is we struggled about, and because Status Quo has been such an insular band, we would be backstage at the biggest festival, and we would never go next door to have... chat with the next band.
Oh, okay.
Always very, very, we do this, this is what we do,
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's not a very good idea, is it? So, where was I?
I don't know. But what with the Beach Boys?
Oh, yeah. So, anyway, eventually we struggled about, we got Brian May to play a bit of guitar on one of the songs, and Buddy Holly thing, beautifully. He did a really nice job. And then we thought, let's do a Beach Boys one. I think this is the way it went. And there's fun. We've shifted through all this Beach Boys. So what could we do that, Quo could do with this? And with literally sitting round dinner, sucking our thumbs. What the? And then fun. Right? How about that? You know, it's a bit. We could do that maybe, and this is the truth. Richard. Sitting there, he said, how about this? He had it. And then the conversation went off into another area. And I said, I think what Richard did is the way it goes. He said, what did you do then? He said, I don't know. That was Rick. So I said, it was like this, you know. And he said, oh, yeah, that. And he played it again. So, that's it. It's great. Let's do that. Let's start like that. And so it is a great start. I mean, the rest of it is just fun, but it's nice. Anyway, in the end, our manager, David Walker, who you never forget, the manager at the time, many things, you know, about him, a very interesting man. He always ate with his mouth open,
right. You
know, the full washing machine. And also, he was a champion poker player. Oh. Never forget that. So anyway, in the end, we paid for them to come home with their wives for a beano,
right.
And do all these television shows to promote us. Really clever. I mean, the guy was clever.
Yeah.
He was clever. And we had a lovely time, and I really got on with them all. I never really got to know Al Jardine, but I got on like a house on fire with Carl. Because he was always standing next to me while we were doing these shows, and I'm playing piano. I'm miming piano in front of Carl.
Wow.
The voice, you know.
God only knows.
I was, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I was made up, and Brian was really nice. He was, dare I say, out there. He was. I remember once he had, they came in with this stuff, you know, a tray full of CD covers. Everybody had to sign it. You know, you do that and you sign the go to the next person. Anyway, Brian's sitting there with this tray, a massive tray in front of him, covered with 50 CD covers, and he's signing them. And one of the Beach Boys guys come through and say, okay, you're on now. And Brian just stood up, and all this stuff went all over. He just stood up and stared into the distance and walked out to the... He was gone. And his wife, second or third wife, I can't remember her name. She was really good for him. She really,
yes,
really took care of him.
That was his final one, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were great. Mike was a bit flash.
It's been mentioned.
Yeah, I just wonder if he actually got 50% of the songs.
He wasn't it in good vibrations. He wanted royalties because he had good vibrations. Aside from everything else that Brian did, all the arrangements and everything.
Yeah,
fair play.
In fact, when we were there, I know that Mike's company was suing Brian's company at the time for $10 million, which were, at that time, well, it's been nice money now, but
yeah.
At the time, that was a lot of money, you know.
Wow.
I mean,
balls, the man.
These Beach Boys. Anyway, it was great. It was really good to work with them. Lovely. And they were lovely guys.
I still mouth it in my head. I'd like to hear a quo version of God Only Knows.
What? I beg your pardon?
Can you imagine it?
No, seriously, how many chords are there? Tell me.
1, 2, 3. Oh, no.
Sorry. Exactly. Yeah. If you've gone off the if you've gone off the finger of one hand, you're in no man's land.
I've got to mention it. Sorry, I know you get asked all the time, but Live Aid, the opening notes of Live Aid, that's you, isn't it, playing piano?
That is, yeah. These hands here. You're looking at them now. I mean, it is unreal. No, don't touch them.
No.
Well, I actually haven't washed them since then. No. That's why they're brown and greasy.
I didn't want to mention it.
No. Yeah.
I
know, it's weird, isn't it? People think it's great. I was just doing a gig, really.
But it's, doesn't it, what, 150 million people watching you?
I didn't think about 150 million people. However, so it was a bit nerve-wracking because there were people as far as the eye could see, literally as far as the eye could see, and I've got good sight. A sea, when they say a sea, this was a sea of people. And it wasn't just the actual notes that I played, I had to play, because I didn't really think about it too much. What I did have to do, because this is pre-click days, I had to count the fucking thing in.
At the exact right tempo.
Well, yeah, I had to guess it, you know.
Is that the drummer's job?
I think Pete Kershaw, he said, no, I'm a bit fed up now, I'm not going to do that. You know, I'm not being paid enough. Well, I'm being paid nothing, actually. It's for charity, mate. Yeah. That's a wrong impression. Pete's a lovely, lovely guy. I haven't seen him since we walked off stage there, but we've still exchanged Christmas cards. And
yeah, but the sort of getting this tempo in your head, I mean.
Yeah.
And you did it. Congratulations.
You're right, actually. It was brilliant, yeah.
You launched.
I didn't think about
the biggest music festival ever.
Ever, yeah, with these hands, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't use them for anything. Well, I pick my nose occasionally, but, you know, that's...
Put it on eBay.
Take us into that digital age. So I can't think of a problem on there.
This was a sample of what they'd come for. 170,000 pop fans invaded the Isle of Wight for the three-day festival of music. Bob Dylan was the star. But while they waited for the top spot artist, there was plenty of other with it music and plenty of groups to provide it. They'd come, they'd camp, they'd dance, they'd listen to their idol. There was some disappointment that Dylan's appearance wasn't longer. Nevertheless, they got what they came for, one of the biggest hippie happenings ever. The power of pop had made it a memorable happening, as they say.
Music. That's our middle name.
Post-Herd. Let's go quickly Post-Herd, because this is another era I don't think you like to talk about. Your early solo albums, obviously Judas Jump, which was, I think you took Henry Spinetti with you, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you played the Isle of Wight Festival in 70.
Yes. Apparently, people keep saying that. I mean, apparently it's a big thing, opening or being at the Isle of Wight Festival, which was... But I saw the bill recently, and everybody on it, except us, was brilliant. I mean, big names. So we got a lot of kudos from that. But the band wasn't any good. I mean, the only person who could play properly was Henry.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, the album doesn't sound like that.
That's very kind of you. I played most of that rubbish on that. It's an awful album.
What?
Oh, dreadful.
What? It's a really good album.
But Scorch?
Yes. You can look through my window, but don't try to walk in my door. You're a beer-drinking woman and I just can't stand no more. Take off at this 10-pound note. I bet you're pouring down your throat. Drink yourself to regret.
You need to lie down. You need a rest.
Just saying.
Wow, I heard it not very long ago, and I thought, this is bloody awful.
But what perspective... How are you... Are you listening to remembering what was happening at the time?
Yeah, we really couldn't do it. The band, we couldn't do anything nice, so in the end I had to sort of take over and did and produced... I'm using inverted commas. Produced the whole thing, and I used to go in day after day trying to make it better, like the Trogs tape, and doing this and that, and a bit of that, and a bit of that, and a bit of
spangly vocals,
fairy dust. And as far as I'm concerned, it was a dust-free zone. it bloody awful album. Dreadful.
Well, ladies and gents,
awful, appallingly produced.
The man who made it. He's selling it for you again.
I sell it again, yeah. I mean, that track, what, John Bound's Body. I mean, what pathetic, the temerity of this track. I think I still wore a bow tie then. I mean, really.
Oh, well, I'm feeling pretty ill today.
Hi, Alan. I'm dreading asking you about your first solo album, Gone to My Head.
Don't then.
Gone to My Head, which is an astonishingly good album. What? Pale Shadow of His Former Self is just a fantastic. And it's the humour in it. So it's a song about being ill, but it's like a jaunty, rocky song. And it's, if you're listening to the words as well to the tune, it's, what was it?
The Welsh National Band.
Yeah.
That was so rude, Finn. So rude.
Yeah, if you're listening to the words as well as the tune, you'll certainly agree on Nunrod McKeown. Well, they don't exactly threaten the 23rd Psalm, I sometimes like to think they've got a certain charm. And now you've been subjected to this dubious song, I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you all to sing along.
Did I write that?
You did.
Oh, dear.
But you think, like, things like The Morning Leaves, M-O-U-R-N, which is a beautiful orchestral...
Blue curtains and the silent morning leaves. Look out the window as she leaves through the leaves. And I know she had to go.
Now, that is music to slit your wrist by.
Oh, Andy. You need to listen to your work. It's...
Ooh.
And eventually, it's a classic.
Great song. Great song.
Lost.
Trevor Preston.
Oh, OK. But it sort of starts off like this acoustic ballad.
Beautiful viper invites us to tea. There's dry bread for you and sour. Ask questions of the man up above. Where does hate go when it wants to make love?
And it ends up sort of like a gospel.
Yes, I really liked him, actually. It was actually with the Andy Bowne Band, which didn't last that long, just a very strenuous tour of America and a few English gigs. We were supporting the Faces at some place in London, maybe the Lyceum or somewhere, quite a big gig. And eventually it was the penultimate song of the set. And I started singing it, and about halfway through the first verse, and Nico Ramsden, who played guitar, he said, this is dying. And he just started playing the last number. Cold Chicago's Got Me, I think. And he was right. I mean, I had no idea, you know, these Faces fans, they're going to listen to this stuff, you know. And I'm playing, I'm in a different world, you know. I never got it right. I was always wrong.
I think I've heard you say... that you were disappointed with some of your albums, or one, whichever one it was, because it was too diverse.
Yeah.
It wasn't focused on one particular genre.
Exactly.
But I think that's the strength of it. I think that is the strength, because there is, you can put it on and you literally don't know what's coming next. And invariably there'll be a certain, I mean, there's a lot of Brian Wilson-esque fifth bass notes going down, and just unexpected sideways chords and melodies that, you know, and it's never not interesting. But I think, yeah, the diversity is the strength of it. People need to listen to it. That's what I'm saying. I'm giving you plain clips of this. Go and download them. You can obviously Andy it wrong.
Well, I don't know. I mean, poor. Let me give you a hug.
Yeah, sure.
too diverse, yes. I believed that at the time, and I still do, and I'm still doing it. The last album, Unfinished Business.
Yes.
Too diverse. Dumb. Never learn. I will not learn. I cannot get it right.
But don't you think the audience has changed now? Because most, you know, the next generation aren't going out buying albums, aren't
they? No.
They're just streaming music. So it's basically a huge wall of music that they've got access to. And, you know, you might do something in this particular genre, that genre. They'll hear that and they go, oh, right, I'll listen to the rest. You know, I think broader the genres, the better. And it's just, as I say, more interesting as an album.
That's a very good point, because if, assuming what I say is true, that it's too diverse, now the putting the album on and playing the one side of the album, then turning it over, that ritual, as it were, is no more. No. People can jump tracks, obviously, streaming, so it's not a big disadvantage, is it, having a very varied product? But, of course, you know, where is the hit song on it? Where's the hit song?
But do people still have hit songs? I think people just find music they like now and explore it.
Peggy Sue was good.
I mean now.
Oh, well, that. Yeah, right.
It was quite good, yeah, I'll give you
that. Oh, that, yeah.
I think it's just a different world in the way people access music. You know, they will find a body of work. Think, right, I'm going in there for explore that for a while. And I think if people go and explore yours, there's lots to discover. And you need to get a marketing manager.
What?
A
salesman.
Actually, all of your work is... Nah.
That is the trouble. That's why I'm so bad at interviews. I'm deadly serious. It's because I always tell the truth. And it's not very good in the music business, which I know. It's such a mistake, and I keep doing it. It's just the same mistake. It's again and again. It's Groundhog Day. You know, pure idiot. I keep doing it.
But I'm good at editing, Andy, don't worry. It'll come out good, I promise.
Wonderful Eggport Express.
Another track from your debut I really enjoyed was Oh James, which is dedicated to some of your heroes, I guess. So it's dedicated to James Taylor, Elton John and Elvis. And I love, there's a little follow-up to this, because it's Oh James, I wish I could sing like you.
And if I had your hearted voice, I know exactly what I'd do. I could handle being a star just like you and Carol are. Now I don't envy you your fame, I mean, who'd be seen with a name like James? But you sing with style and play with class. You made me get up off my seat. When I feel weak, you make me strong, 'cause someone somewhere's buying good songs. And oh, James, I wish I could sing like you.
What I love, and there's so much humour in your lyrics, it's on your following album, Sweet William, you do Oh Tarzan.
Oh,
it's,
yeah,
Tarzan, I wish I could swing like you.
Oh, Tarzan, I wish I could swing like you. And if I had your manly frame, I'd make it every night with Jane. I'd get rid of that chimpanzee, just Jane and me, and a house and a tree. And oh, Tarzan, I wish I could swing like you.
And if I had your manly frame, I'd make it
every night with Jane.
I'd get rid of that chimpanzee, just Jane and me in that house in the tree. And, Tarzan.
Oh, really? Did I do that? Oh, Tarzan.
Yeah.
Did I?
Yeah.
That's very funny. Well done.
Yeah.
I'm patting myself on the head here.
Because I was playing it, I thought, hang on, this was on the earlier album. And then I listened to the words.
Again, in retrospect, you see, if I ever think about that, I think, nobody ever really got that. But you did. I'm thrilled. I'm serious.
Yes, but I'm sure people would have got it at the time, wouldn't they?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, Sweet William, please don't pick the flowers. Oh, Sweet William.
Sweet William, because that was you did that with her, didn't you?
Yeah.
And that was a B-side, I can't remember, but then you redid it. What was it, that particular song, did you think it was hidden away?
Well, Jimmy Horowitz, the producer, said, he said, let's do Sweet William again. Let's do it properly. This is great. So I said, no, I don't want to do it. It's just, it's poppy, horrible. It's not clever. It's not funny, and it won't get you noticed. And he said, no, I promise you, let's just do it, okay? This is the truth. He said, let's just do it, and I promise you, if you're not happy, it won't go on the album. So we did it, recorded the best job we could, and I still didn't like it. I said, I don't like it, and sure enough, it went on the album, and it was the album title. That's the music business. Yeah. It was rubbish, really. Sweet William.
It's really good.
I like the chord. But after that, you know, oh, William, you're a clever dick. Sweet William, they're not yours to pick. Oh, no. Please don't pick the... I mean, you know, what a...
Yes. That's coming out. Oh, Mandy, how can you... You've got such good taste in music, except your own. I don't understand it. Right, I'm going to throw another song I really love. And this is a bit later. And this, we're talking about chord progression. This is genius. I think you do three chord changes in about two bars. But Another Shipwreck.
Oh, yeah. I've
got your version.
Yeah, I've got a nosebleed doing that.
Yes.
Now that is one track that I'm really proud of.
At last.
Really proud. It's clever, clever. And it's beautifully produced. Chris Neil. That album is beautifully produced. There's a lot. Half that album I really, really like. It's really good. That was good advice, wasn't it?
Absolutely. But there's one bit where no, 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 and then it changes key with the keyboards.
Yeah.
And then it comes back and it's changed key again.
Yeah, it's really clever. I say it myself. That's the stuff I really like.
Because you're later on, I mean, there's hints of Steely Dan and unusual jazzy kind of progressions as well, I think.
Yeah, I've always been a bit weird. It comes from not knowing how to play, you know. Every 17th chord works, you know, the rest is just bollocks.
Yeah.
But no, it's not quite like that. But, you know, it's called... I learned this earlier on with painting when I was, one of the tiny, tiny jobs I had was, assistant to a political cartoonist. And I learned controlled accident. And that's what I applied sometimes to, the keyboard. And I do to the guitar now. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. And, it can take you away then and you can go off into different places if you're lucky. And if you don't think about it too hard.
Obviously, by now you joined, I think, initially sort of hidden away, you joined Quorum. I think it's a session. Well, they.
Yeah, it's a session. Yeah, I was just. Sessions.
But I guess that was a lot of work. So it wasn't till 77 that you did Come Back Romance, All Is Forgiven.
Yeah.
Solo album. Drowned in Texas, which is. Do you like it?
You like that?
Oh, yes, I do. Not keen.
Well, the lyrics are pretty, they're pretty slim, aren't they?
Planning my time, everything was straight in my mind, till I met you and you changed my life. I didn't like your dress, all the way you painted your face,
Mind you, I can tell you, she was a girl. Oh, sir. No, that was a close one.
Okay.
Yeah, she was, wow. Anyway, but I didn't think that the lyrics were very clever, but the chord sequence I love. Yeah, but I wasn't keen on the mix.
Oh, okay.
Not enough voice, and the voice wasn't very good anyway. So
there's
the salesman in me again.
Yeah, 317 Manhattan Blues.
317. I keep seeing that number all the time in my life. I wake up at night and look at the clock. It's 317. I see it on passing buses, and this. It's really strange. I was working on an album for a friend, and I was living in this hotel in Manhattan, and he was as well, and he had this... Well, he had the suicide suite. That's what it's about, really. It was a dreadful, you know. There was a window that looked out onto a brick wall. I mean, it was just slit your wrists. But the song and the production, I really love. I love that one.
Yay!
That would be on my 12-track best of... Vinyl.
Okay.
12-inch.
Dare I ask what the others are? By the time you got to about 10, you've probably gone off one of them.
Well, another shipwreck will be on it.
Yes.
There's a song called Help Me, which was just a single, I think. Have you heard that?
No.
Help Me, produced by Nigel Gray. He's dead.
Okay.
Another one.
Sorry.
Lovely bloke. God, we did... We did some drugs. The drummer of the Police.
Oh, Stuart Copeland.
Stuart Copeland, yeah. He played the drums on it. Fantastic.
Oh, wow.
It was just Nigel called in some people to, as a favour, can you come and give me a few hours, a couple of hours? And Stuart Copeland was there, Phil Palmer, and a couple of other really good people. And we recorded this track.
Yes.
And it's brilliant. Though I say it myself, everything about it is exactly what I like,
yeah,
and what I'm proud of. And you know what? Even you haven't heard of this. It's nothing. It just doesn't exist. I've got the single. I've got the 7-inch single. It's really good. That will be on the album, yeah, with 317 and Another Shipwreck.
It's getting there.
Rubber Gloves will be on there.
Oh, yes.
You like that?
Funny, unfinished business.
Yeah. Unfinished Business, yeah. I quite like a lot of that album, Phil.
Mm.
I like Tick My Box.
Maggie Smith, Beachy Head, All My Bluff, Golden Shred, Blue Suede Shoes, Paul Smith Socks, All the Above, Tick My Box. The Fender Telly, Evening War, Pinot Noir, and Rockafor, Eric Coates, Bristol Ducks, Marmite Soldiers, they tick my box.
I'm keen to see what else.
Oh dear, you'd have to give me none of the old stuff. Nothing on the first two albums.
Really?
No, really nothing. And it was so inward-looking, so pretentious.
Pathetic. That was around the time of Crosby, Stills and Nash. You know, it was a singer-songwriter era.
Yeah.
So it fits perfectly within that, doesn't it? You know, Blue by Joni Mitchell. And,
yeah. Oh.
So it's of its time.
I don't think anything I've ever done or will do if I live to be 1,000 years old will be the same as or fit to work with Blue by Joni Mitchell.
But, I mean, that era of songwriter.
Yeah.
From James Taylor.
Yeah, but all these people can sing, you know. you're talking a different world here. I've got to let the dog out for a pee. Oh,
absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no offence. Dog needs a shit. When I've got time and I can get Mike Paxman the time and it's not this week, I will send you a WAV file or whatever it is of Help Me.
Please.
I really like this.
Mm.
This is.
Yeah, that's,
Carry on.
So, Andy, regular listeners will know that usually we go through a magazine page by page looking at the articles, but mm-hmm. I think I'm delighted to say that we've digressed beautifully into your extraordinary career, so it's been a joy to listen to your memories, especially your
I've majored in digression. Thank you.
And so, going forward, we've potentially got Volume 2 of Outlet coming out, is that right?
I should never have said that, should I?
You're not allowed
but,
to say.
No, no, it's fine. Yeah, it's, I've got stuff, and I'm looking forward to having the time to continue writing it, pulling it together, and then recording it with Mike Paxman, and, yeah, putting it out there, as it were. Sorry, yeah. There's a lot to do. I mean, it's, you know, it's expensive, and it's, in many ways, unrewarding, but the artistic side is so rewarding that I will keep doing it.
Mm.
There's the salesman in me again. Yeah. I think you better edit that. To make it sound more positive.
Yeah. You might have to listen to this in reverse. I don't know how to do that.
Don't get me wrong. I'm excited about it.
So
it's just not going to happen this week.
Yeah. So, Andy, thanks so much for this. And again, congratulations on the latest album out there. And listeners can get it from andybound.com. Is that right?
Yeah, they can, yeah. And I believe it's on Deezer, Squeezer. What are they called? Apple. I see.
Spotify.
I'm not a great you know, I'm more of an analog guy. I've actually only just learned to tie my own shoelaces, so I'm not that technical.
Well done. Congratulations. So thanks to Susie Humphrey for the jingles. And to read this issue of Record Mirror, which we haven't talked about aside from the front cover, the magazine is online at iamtheeggpod.com. Where you'll also find an exclusive playlist of this week's top 30 singles. To support this podcast and to access bonus content, please subscribe to patreon.com/eggpod. But for now, thank you so much, Andy Bowne.
Thank you, it's been a pleasure.